you can see, it will be a talk where there will be no von Neumann algebras, but there will be orbit equivalent. So this is the link. So this is to report on a joint and long project which began many years ago with Ian Putnam and Christian Skau, and now fortunately Hiroki Matui joined the group. And the goal is to classify up to orbit equivalence minimal free action of Zn on the counterset. So we could be very, very optimistic and say to classify action of amenable groups, discrete amenable groups. But we are so far away that let's first think about Zn. Let me remind you what we have seen more than once during the week, so the measurable case. So in the measurable case, orbit equivalence was in fact defined by Dai, who proved that if you have two finite measure-preserving ergodic transformations, they are always orbit equivalent. And clearly it killed the subject for at least 15 years. And it's only when you are looking at the case of non-singular transformation that suddenly things become, quotation, a bit more interesting. This is Krieger result. And you have a complete classification in terms of the flow of weights or the associated flow of the transformation. Now, the final version for the amenable case is the result of Kohn-Feldman-Weiss in 1981, I think, where they show that any amenable action is orbit equivalent to a Z action. Now, for non-amenable group, so there are many things happening these days. We have seen many results during the week, and I don't want to comment more on these. But from the measurable case, let me make some comments on the Borel situation. In the Borel case, Weiss proved that any Zn action are hyperfinite. And by this I mean that any Zn action, Borel Zn action, will be orbit equivalent to an hyperfinite equivalence relation. So we have defined a notion of hyperfiniteness for Borel equivalence relation. So it's a union of finite Borel equivalence relation. And Weiss showed that any Zn action is orbit equivalent to a Z action or is hyperfinite. The main difference between this one and this one is the fact that in the measurable case, the points where you don't know and which are not very nice, it's not. Will not be a big problem because usually you throw them away because they're at a set of measure zero. So in the Borel situation, and we will see in the topological situation, you cannot do this because you have to really to get an orbit equivalent which take care of all the points in the space. And this is one of the main problems that we face. Okay, so Weiss proved that any Zn action are hyperfinite. Doughty, Jackson, and Kekris classify all the hyperfinite equivalence relation, and the invariant is the number of ergodic, finite invariant ergodic measures. So it's a cardinality of a set of finite ergodic invariant measures. So Jackson and Kekris and Louvot extended this result to finitely generated correction of finitely generated growth with polynomial growth. And this is the best that we have, plus this result of Gao and Jackson, in the hyperfinite case. So even in the hyperfinite case, we don't have a result as strong as in the measurable situation. So we cannot handle all amenable groups. So it's why I was saying this is really out of reach for the moment. So my talk will be on the topological situation. So there we are working with the counterset, and the group which will appear will always be a countable discrete group acting freely by homeomorphism on X and minimally. And you can really think about Z or Z square or Zn. So these are the examples that we want to consider. But let me just remind you that the class of minimal homeomorphism of the counter set is very rich. By Ewitt-Krieger theorem, for every finite measure preserving transformation, every big finite measure preserving transformation has a model using a counter minimal system. So now the definition, at least once, the definition of orbit equivalence will say that two actions are orbit equivalent if there exists an homeomorphism which sends orbit onto orbit. So this is the real, the standard definition. The important part is here is that it's for every point X, and the map will be an homeomorphism because we are working in the topological category. The first remark is that clearly conjugacy implies orbit equivalence, but in fact orbit equivalence is much weaker. It's a much weaker notion. The second remark is that it's interesting, in fact only in the counter case, more or less, for the following reason. If you have two homeomorphisms on compact connected space, if they are orbit equivalent, then they are in fact flip conjugate, so phi is conjugate to psi, or phi is conjugate to phi inverse. So orbit equivalence is really interesting only in the zero-dimensional space case. Now, to what we are interested in is not really the action, it's the orbit, so this one is the equivalence relation induced by this action. So let me just introduce a bit of terminology. So to this countable group action, we will associate R of G, which is the equivalence relation induced on the space, and because the action is free, then we have a bijection between X cross G and R of G. And we topologize R of G by carrying the V of the topology that you have on X cross G. So this is the topology on the counter set and the discrete topology on G. Having done this, R of G becomes a locally compact, Hausdorff locally compact and sigma compact space. And moreover, we have, you know, on this equivalence relation, you have a source map and a range map. So the range, if you look at xg of x, the range is the map which to the pair xgx associates gx, or x depending if you want to look at the right or the left side, and you have a source map which to the pair xgx associates x. And what you realize, because g is discrete here, then these two maps are local homeomorphisms. This is what we work, what is called an étale equivalence relation. And in the Borel situation, in fact in the measurable situation initially, but in which the proof was written by Fellman and Moore, and they show that any equivalence relation in the measurable, in the Borel situation, is in fact induced by the action of some countable group. The same result, and in fact the same proof goes through, is valid for equivalence relation, étale equivalence relation on the counter set. So any equivalence, étale equivalence relation is induced by the action of a group. But in the same thing that we have in the measurable case, then you cannot always choose a group acting freely. So there exists, so this was a result of Yorff and Molberg, you cannot always find a group action or a group acting freely on the space which realizes this equivalence relation. Now, having introduced the R of G, I can rewrite the notion of orbit equivalence by simply saying R1 is orbit equivalence to R2 if there exists a homeomorphism which such that F cross F sends R of G1 onto R of G2, and it's a bijection. Notice that I am just asking this to be a bijection. I'm not asking that it preserves that it's an homeomorphism. If I were asking that it's an homeomorphism, I would ask much more. I would have really the isomorphism of the two equivalence relations, and it would be a much stronger notion. Now let me give you an example which happens relatively often of how to construct this, how to construct some example of etal equivalence relation which are not directly coming from the action of a group, or doesn't seem to come directly from the action of a group. You can build them using tiling. So if you take a tiling of R2 and you associate to it, there's a, you associate its continuous hull, then if your tiling is finite local, a finite local complexity, then this hull is a compact space with an action of R2. So it's a dynamical system with a continuous dynamical system. Now if the tiling is repetitive and if omega t is without periodic tilings, then the action is minimal. This is a continuous version. Now you have your tiling, so therefore you have ties. Pick a finite, because I'm saying that the finite local complexity, I have a finite set of prototiles. Now for each prototype, I pick a point, which I will call a puncture. And now if I have this puncture, I can tile every, I can put on every tile of my tiling a puncture by just translating this puncture that I have on each of the prototypes. Doing this, on this space, this continuous hull, I get a new subspace, which will be, which I call omega punk, which will be a set of all the tilings for which there exists one tile with the puncture being at the origin of R2. So this space is a counterset. And now you have an equivalence relation on this space, which is simply given by this R punk that I have here. Two tiling T1 and T2 will be equivalent if and only if you can translate one to the other one by an element X in R2. This equivalence relation is an etal equivalence relation. So this is an example of this etal equivalence relation which appears in this ball game, and in fact these etal equivalence relations are, we will see that they are all orbit equivalent to approximately finite equivalence relation. Another class of example is the notion of AF equivalence relation. So you begin with the Bratelli diagram, and I suppose that my Bratelli diagram is simple. Therefore, the path space that I associate to my Bratelli diagram will be a counterset. It will have no isolated points. Now I can define on this Bratelli diagram a family of finite equivalence relation, Rn, which means simply two paths, this one and this one, will be equivalent if they coincide from the level n on. If I take the union of all these finite equivalence relations, is that we call tail equivalence relation. Then with the topology induced from the topology, when you embed Rn in the product XB of the path space cross the path space, you get a compact equivalence relation, compact space. And you endow R tau with the inductive limit topology, means U is an open set in R if and only if the intersection of U with Rn is open in tau n for every n. With this topology, R tau is a Natal equivalence relation, and we call this an AF relation, or approximately finite relation. And the result is that any AF relation can be obtained via this construction. So we now have a way to construct approximately finite equivalence relation, which correspond to the hyperfinite equivalence relation that people use in either in the measurable category or in the Borel category. So, let me make a remark, and it's always, I think it's a propaganda remark. This is a result which is absolutely remarkable and which is not very well known or very often used, is this result of Hermann, Putnam and Scow, which in fact tells you that you have any quantum minimal system, then you have always a model using a Bratelli Bratelli diagram. In fact, they prove that there exists always a simple Bratelli diagram, and you can put an order, a partial order, on the paths, you know, on the edges, in order that there is only a single max and a single min path. Then, using this partial order, you define the Bratelli-Worship map. It's a minimal homeomorphism. And in fact, it's a model for any counter-minimal system. And this result is really very important because it's a result which allows us, in the case of Z, for the Z case, to go on and to work. As you will see, this is why we have so many problems for the case of Zn, because there is no such model. So on this model, let me just notice that tail equivalence is a sub-equivalence of the equivalence induced by C. And in fact, if you take a point which is not cofinal with the max path or the min path, then its orbit on the tail equivalence is the same than its orbit on the action of C. And it is only for the points which are cofinal to the max or to the min, then in fact the orbit equivalence on the tail equivalence relation is smaller, strictly smaller, than the orbit on the phi b. And in fact you have that the orbit on the phi is the union of these two classes. And therefore the orbit equivalence on the phi is the orbit equivalence generated by tail equivalence, plus the fact that you'd say that the max and the min are equivalent. And the result that we had proved for the case of Z is that in fact R of CD, the Z action, is orbit equivalent to this tail, to this approximately finite equivalence relation. And therefore, for the case of Z, if you want to classify up to orbit equivalence Z action, you have to classify the AF equivalence relation. And I will now remind you what is the invariant which is used. So the classification of the AF equivalence relation. So the invariant, I will describe the invariant in dynamical terms. We could describe it using the link with AF algebra and the K0 of the associated AF algebra. But let me do it in terms, in the dynamical terms. So I look at the continuous function from x to z, and I mod out by the subgroup of all the functions which integrate to zero against all the finite invariant measures. So I get an abelian group, this is an order group where the order, where the positive cone is given by the set of function which have a representative, class of function which has a positive representative. And if you look at the quotient, you get a dimension group. You get a simple dimension group. And the result is that for minimal AF equivalence relation, this simple dimension group plus the class of a unit, the constant function 1, is in fact a complete invariant for orbit equivalence. So I just make the link between this dimension group, it's a dimension group without infinitesimals, with the usual one that we know for AF algebra. So if I define the coboundary B of XR to be the subgroup generated by the difference chi of RU and minus chi of SU, where R is the range and S is the source of a compact graph containing R, then the coboundaries are contained in the set of functions which integrate to zero, clearly. When you integrate against a finite invariant measure, you get zero. And you can associate the group D of XR, which is the quotient of C of XZ by D of XR. This is the usual K group of the AF algebra. And the quotient of the set of functions which integrate to zero by the coboundary is the infinitesimal subgroup of this AF algebra. So you, in this language, Elliott Krieger result for AF equivalence relation can be rephrased by these invariants, this dimension group, signal dimension group, is a complete invariant for isomorphism and not for orbit equivalence. So when I introduced the orbit equivalence relation before, I said that the only thing that I want is that F cross F of R1 is equal to R2. If I had asked that these F cross F map will give me an homeomorphism between R1 and R2, I would have got this result. So this is the isomorphism. So this means that by using this result, we have a complete classification of the AF equivalence relation. And therefore, if we want to prove orbit equivalence, if we want to prove orbit equivalence, the strategy is the following. So first, classify minimal AF equivalence relation up to orbit equivalence. Okay, it's done. And the second step will be to show that if you have a free minimal action of a group, then R of G is orbit equivalent to an AF equivalence relation. To be orbit equivalent to an AF equivalence relation is that we have introduced by saying this means that R of G would be affable. As I mentioned, in the definition, let me just come back. In the definition of orbit equivalence that I have here, I just ask that it's a bijection. I am not asking that F cross F will be an homeomorphism on the space. Okay, this is orbit equivalence. Isomorphism will be asking that this bijection will be an homeomorphism. Exactly. In fact, if you have two dimension groups which are the same, which are when you model by the infinitesimal subgroup, they are isomorphic. The two orbit equivalents that you will have got will be orbit equivalent. However, they will not be isomorphic. So I come back to the strategy. So we have to show that R of G is orbit equivalent to an AF equivalence relation. And this is where, in the measurable case, is so easy. You know, all the points that you do not know how to handle, as long as they form a set of measure zero, you throw them away and everything works. And this is where we have a lot of trouble, because we cannot do this, and we have to take care about these points. So the first step is to show that we can have small extension of an EF equivalence relation is still orbit equivalent to an EF equivalence relation. So if I come back to the example of the case of Z, you know, in the case of Z we had the Bratelli-Virchik model, so therefore we had tail equivalence, and we noticed that tail equivalence RC is the equivalence relation generated by R plus the fact that you indotify the mean and the map. And in fact, this is how it was proved, that our phi was orbit equivalence to R. So what we want to do is to extend equivalence, approximately finite equivalence relation, by something which would be a bit more complicated than simply 2 points. And there are more than one version of this extension result. We had a first version which was not powerful enough to treat the complete case of action of Z square. So there is now a new version which will be published in Ergodic Theory in Dynamical System, and which doesn't seem to be strong enough again for the case of Zn. So there is a new extension of this one. But let me give you the extension of the case for Z square. So first, a bit of notation. If I have 2 equivalence relations on a space Y, I define the space or the equivalence relation R cross S over Y to be the pair X and Y prime. And I think it's better to look at this small picture here. So I denoted vertically the equivalence relation R, horizontally the equivalence relation S, and what I am looking is pair x, y, and y, and y prime. So y and y prime are s equivalent, y and s are equivalent. So there are a pair of points which allows you to go from this to this, using first s and after r. So I can also define s cross r over y by saying that I go in the other direction. So I will say that 2 equivalence relations are transverse to each other if, first of all, the intersection, if you have 2 points which are both R and S invariant and R equivalent and S equivalent, it's only the diagonal. And second of all, there exists a nomeomorphism, H, which allows you for every pair of point x, y, and y, y prime in S, so every pair like this, then there exists an x prime in Y, which allows you to go the other way. And there is a unique way to go this. So this is the notion to be transverse. You can either go this way or you can go this way. Okay? So this is the notion of the transversality. An example. So if you take an ethyl equivalence relation on X, and you take an action, a free action of a group with the three properties. The first one is that for any element of a group, when you look at alpha G cross alpha G, if you begin with a pair of points which are R equivalent, their image is R equivalent. Consequently, alpha G cross alpha G gives you a map from R to R, and you ask that it's a nomeomorphism. Third condition, there is no point in, if you take a point X in capital X, there is no point X in alpha G of X is never R equivalent. Then I look at R of G, which is simply the equivalence relation generated by this group. Then R and R of G are transverse. And to be transverse is really having this homeomorphism, and I've just described it to you. So this is one example. Now, some property of transversality. If you have two transverse equivalence relation, then in fact you have a bisection from R, the equivalence relation R cross S over Y, and the equivalence relation induced by R and S via this map. And if R and S are two transverse equivalence relation and they are etale, then by transferring the topology that you have on R cross S over Y, you get that the equivalence relation induced by R and S is etale. And now what we will use, the case that we will use is R will be an AF equivalence relation, S will be a compact equivalence relation, transverse, and therefore the equivalence relation generated by R and S will be an AF equivalence relation. So this is how we will use this extension result, beginning by an AF equivalence relation and having a compact equivalence relation. When you look at the equivalence relation generated by both of them, you still get an AF equivalence relation. So now let me state the adsorption theorem. So I begin with a minimal AF equivalence relation, XR. And, you know, in the first case that I had shown to you was a case of 2 points. The space Y was simply 2 points, the max and the mean. So now we generalize this situation. The 2 points are a set Y, which will be a closed set, and we will have on this space Y a compact etale equivalence relation. So this is, we will extend R by this compact equivalence relation K, which is defined on a very, very small set Y. What are the conditions that we need for Y? Y is to be thin, so it means that it has zero measure against all the R equivalent invariant measures, finite invariant measures. When you restrict R to Y, you get an etale equivalence relation, and K is transverse to R restricted to this equivalence relation, to Y. Now, if you have this, then in fact, the map, there exists a homeomorphism, and this is the theorem, there is a homeomorphism, which sends the equivalence relation induced by R and K to R, so it will be a bijection here. When you restrict it to Y, and you get R restricted to R or Y, it's a homeomorphism. This is an important technical step that we will need in the proof, but you can forget it for the moment. And the what is important in this result for the moment is the fact that the equivalence relation induced by R and K is affable. More than this, it's orbit equivalent to R. Okay? So this is the theorem, the technical theorem, which tells you that you can extend an AF equivalence relation on small sets. And you can extend them by compact equivalence relation as long as they are transverse. Okay, so this is the technical step that now we need. Second part of the proof means showing that if you begin with an equivalence relation induced by an action of Z square or Zn or any group G, and if you want to show that it's orbit equivalent to an AF equivalence relation, what we need is to be able to set up the situation in order that we can apply this absorption theorem. So, in the rest of my talk, I will consider the case of Z square, and I will make some comment for the case of Zn at the end. So, What we need now is to set up the condition in order that we can apply this theorem. So we need to construct a sequence of finite equi-subequivalence relation so that the union is a minimal AF. This is what we need here. We need to construct a closed set Y and a compact equivalence relation on Y transverse in order that we can extend and in order that R phi will be equal to the equivalence induced by R and K. If we can do this, we apply the absorption theorem, and therefore we get that any action is affable. So what I want to do in the next 10 minutes will be just to give you an hint or an idea how we do this, how we construct this thing. Let me, before doing this, let me just mention one thing. So for action of Z square, now you can replace 2 by n. So for action of Z square or Zn, we know that they are affable, so therefore we know that they are orbit equivalent to an action of Z. But we do not know what are the class of action of Z that you can obtain like this. Okay? And one of the reasons why we don't know this is because we don't have a model. I have reminded you before the Hermann-Putnam-Schau, which tells you that for any counter minimal system, you have a model, and in fact, beginning by a simple Bratelli diagram, you can construct a counter minimal system. We don't have such model for action of Z square. So the idea of a construction. Just put this there. Let me begin by three remarks. The first one is that if you pick any Kolpin set in X, because your action is minimal, you know that the orbit of X will hit infinitely many often U. Now if I'm in the case of Z square, I could look at the orbit as the grid of Z square into R2. And having a point, having a Kolpin set U, I can look at the set, or I can mark all the points in Z square such that the n of X is in U. I get a subset of a grid. Notice that if you look at these set of points, and now you look at the set of points which correspond to phi n of X, or it's simply P of X translated by n. Second thing is that if you, for every R, there exists a delta, such that if your 2 points on the counter set are close enough, then the return time to you will be the same on a large ball. Okay, this is simply the continuity of the action. Second thing, this set of points Px a priori is anything. However, it can be shown that you can always find a Kolpin set U for which this set of points is separated, M separated, so the distance between 2 points is at least M. So this is relatively easy to think, because if you take your Kolpin set small enough, it will take a longer time before you go back. Okay, so this is relatively easy. And you can also do it in order that it's syndetic. This means that the set of points doesn't accumulate at some point and there is a big hole in another part. So it's uniformly distributed inside R2. And this is the version, the technical version. Okay? So this is the starting point. We will begin by Kolpin set and we will look at the first return time. Now, if you have one of these set of points on R2, you can associate to it its Voronoi tessellation. When you have a set of points which has this property, it's called a Delaunay set. But you can associate its Voronoi tessellation. This means that for every point, you can look at V of P, the set of points in R2, such that the distance to from V to P is small or equal to the distance from V to all the other points of your set P of X. Okay? So here we have a picture. So these are my points of P of X. Now from this point I have built the Voronoi cells. When I have the Voronoi cells, now I can associate to it its Delaunay triangulation. This means I connect two points of P of X if there is an edge in between them of the Voronoi tessellation. So I get a triangulation. Oh, it's not always a triangulation, but you can organize yourself in order by adding something that you get a triangulation. Notice one thing, is that when you do this, it means the Voronoi tessellation that you have obtained, even if the points are going very far away, you could still have that some edges are still very small. Let me give you an example. If you have four points which are like this and equal distance, then the Voronoi cells will be simply this. Okay, it's not a triangulation. Now suppose that you move a bit two of them. If you move a bit two of them, you will get something like this. And even if these points are going to infinity, what you hope that you will do by simply taking your Clopen set smaller and smaller and smaller, then you still have a very, very small edge. And in fact, in order to apply the absorption theorem, we cannot have small edges. So we need to change this Voronoi itself, or this Voronoi construction tessellation, in order to avoid this situation. And the way to do this is to modify the construction by not taking, you know, when you take the Voronoi construction, what do you do about the Delaunay? So the point that you have here is the intersection of the three, and I don't know how you say this in English. What's the name of the point? It's the intersection of the three media. Okay, you replace it by the intersection of the, we take the in-center of the... Yeah, okay. And we replace it by the in-center of the... And this is the thing which will allow us, because if you replace by the in-center when you make the construction of the Voronoi cells, that in fact the small edge will disappear. Okay? So this trick, which is a trick in dimension 2, doesn't exist in dimension 3. Or in fact, we don't have a similar trick. So we had to change the construction, and I will perhaps give two words at the end if I have time. So this was what block us for a long time to go from Z square to Zn. Okay. So by doing this, what we can construct is the following thing. There exist constant B, E, and A, such that for any separated and syndetic M separated and 2M syndetic subset of R2, there exists a tessellation, which is not the Voronoi tessellation, but is a modified Voronoi tessellation, with the following property. Each tile, S, is a polygon with at most E edges. So we have a control on the number of edges. Each tile contains a unique representative P of your set, initial set. The tiles are growing. Or in fact, you have a minimal capacity of each tile. So if you look at the ball centered on this point P of F of radius BM over 2, then it's contained inside F. So the tiles, you know, have a certain size. The tiles are also well separated, means that if they do not intersect, then they are far apart. far apart by saying that you know exactly what it, you have a lower bound of their distance. Next thing is that the angle between two edges is bounded below. It doesn't really, you don't get tiles which become finer, finer, and finer like this. And the last thing is that for any vertex, you have only three tiles, okay, coming out. So you can build this thing by taking this Voronoi construction and by replacing by the end center. This is what we can do. So this means that if I give you one Clopen set, such that the return times, P of X, is M separatist and 2M syndetic, I get a decomposition of the orbit in finite sub-equivalence relation, which are the points which are inside each of the cells. Now in my construction that I want to construct not only one, but I want to construct an inclusion of R1 into R2 and so on. So now you need to do this again. To do this again is taking a Clopen set which is smaller, you get a set which is a set P which will be more separated, which will be still 2M synthetic and M separated with M larger, and you want to do the same thing. The problem is to do it like this. The set of the Voronoi tessellation that you get, this change Voronoi tessellation, doesn't contain the preceding one. Because, you know, when you take the Voronoi tessellation, you take straight line and it will cross some of the Voronoi tessellation of the first step. So you have to adjust. So this can be done. So you can refine this and you can get the following sequence. For every x, there exists a sequence of tessellation, tau L of x, which tau L each has capacity L, means each tile is large, contain a ball which is large. Tau L plus 1 is L plus the diameter of tau L of x separated, so this means that the tiles are more and more separated. Each tile of tau L meets at most E others. This tells you that in fact the edges between the tiles are going longer, longer, and longer. And for every tile of tau L is contained in a single tile of tau L plus 1. So this is the inclusion of tau L into tau L plus 1. So for every x, tau L partitions that square into finite equivalence relation indexed by an element of tau L of x. These equivalence relations are the approximately finite equivalence relation that you want. The fact that the capacity grows means that you will get minimality. The fact that you have this condition, which a priori would be the condition which would allow us to apply this absorption theorem. Unfortunately, because the set Y will be the boundary of these things, this is too large. We cannot prove by doing this, we cannot prove that the equivalence relation in restricted to Y is a tile. So to do this, we have to refine the construction. So the construction can be refined. So I give you a geometrical idea, but the construction from now on is completely combinatorial. Okay? So what you have, we have these tiles in tau L, and we divide them in sub-tiles, depending on their neighbors. So a tile now will be replaced by, which was indexed by T, will be indexed by a triple T, T double prime and T prime, T double prime being here, T prime being there, and this one is T, T prime, T double prime. And this can be constructed in a constant way, so it can be described combinatorically. So the tile T is subdivided by considering all T, T prime, such that T intersection T prime intersection T double prime is non-empty. It's what this picture shows you. So therefore you get a sub-equivalence relation of RC, and defined like this. So you will say that two points are equivalent if and only if n and m are in Z square intersection in each of these blocks. If they are in this block, the two points will be equivalent. And now the first result. It will work. The first result is that the union of these things is minimal. Now we can define boundaries. The boundaries B3 will correspond to vertices. So we have intersection of these big things. The B2 will be edges. They are clopen for each tile or for each tessellation towel. You take the intersection of them. So you get a clopen set, two closed set, which are thin. The thinness comes from the fact that these edges were going larger, larger, and larger. And you can construct a compact tile equivalent solution. So this part I really cannot explain in 2 minutes, because this is a relatively technical and difficult point. But you can find a transverse equivalence relation. You can apply it. So you apply it twice now. So first you extend, you can imagine that you have these big tiles. Now first you will glue along the edges, and after you will glue along the points, the vertices, in order to get the whole orbit. And this allows you to show that in fact an action of Z square is affable, because it's orbit equivalent to an action, an approximately finite equivalence relation. I still have 30 seconds? Okay. So the difference between, for the case of Z square and the case of Zn, is, as I mentioned, that this was this in center. And the problem in Z cube, for example, is when you take a Voronoi tessellation, you can have tetrahedron which are very, very, very flat. Take 4 points on the plane, and then move 2 of them and create the tetrahedron that you will get. You will get a tetrahedron which has very long edges, but a very small capacity. And we need to get rid of these. But we need to get rid of these without being allowed to take out or to change the vertices that we had used from our Delaunay set. But fortunately, people in numerical analysis has a way to do this type of thing. So we have studied this way, and we can do this now for Zn. Let's say it's a 90% theorem, because it's not yet totally written up. Okay, so I stop here.
Other questions or remarks?
Yes. Yes, it's the same modulo of infinitesimals.
Well, all right, but after all, in most cases, are then infinitesimals.
Yeah, okay.
All right, but then in most cases, isomorphisms and orbital equivalents are the same. At least for the AF.
For the AF case, yes. But not for the AF. Okay, yeah, no, for the AF case, you're right. The problem that we have for the moment is that in the case, as I mentioned, in the case of Z, you can construct for every dimension group, simple dimension group that you give me without infinitesimals, I can build an example of a quantum minimal system which is this invariant. So this is, therefore, the set of the class of all simple dimension group without infinitesimal can be realized using a quantum minimal system. We don't know where the Z square action. And we really do not have any idea. In fact, we don't have so many examples of that square action. The only two examples that I could mention is the phase of the double dangereux, means you take the circle, you disconnect along the orbit, one orbit and fix two alpha and beta, which are rationally independent, and now you disconnect along the orbit of alpha, and this orbit of alpha, you disconnect it again along the orbit of beta of each of these points. You get now an action of Z square. You can compute its dimension group. These are the only one, plus the two other metals, that we really know to construct. We don't have many constructions. The other UFO constellation where you can say something are the one coming from tilings, where you can see things and you have examples where you know what is, what will be the K group. For example, for the Penrose or for octagonal tiling and so on. But they are more or less the only example that we have.
One question? Okay, that is the end of the topic.